Welcome.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, October 9th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 10 minutes or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me as we kick off a great Tuesday edition of the show. Two guests will join me here today. The first, Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. We'll chat with him about NFL Week 6, tonight's NHL card. Then also, if we've got time, we'll take a look at the CIMB Classic over in Malaysia at TPC Kuala Lumpur. 78 players in that field, which starts on Wednesday night. Second half of today's show, Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com will join us. NFL Week 6, College Football Week 7 with him. Couple of games on the NFL side with Rolf, including the first game here in London for this season. That's between the Seahawks and the Raiders. Now we've got a whole slew of college football games to talk about with that professional handicapper. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Make sure you check out everything that we have to offer over there. Updated college football power ratings from me, MLB pick from me for tonight's Red Sox versus Yankees game. Parker Michaels has his updated NHL picks for today's card. We have golf previews and our daily fantasy preview for the CIMB Classic. Super contest recap, which was not a good weekend for us. But as we go throughout the week here, we'll have NASCAR. We'll have additional MLB. I'll have a series preview for the Dodgers versus Brewers and for the Astros versus whoever they wind up playing. Additional NFL and college football content. We really do have it all over at bangthebook.com. Make sure you go check out our free pick contests as well. And don't forget about that promo code at DSI Sportsbook. That's BANG100. It'll get you a 100% deposit bonus over there. Finally, one thing I do want to mention at the top of today's show. We are approaching our 1,000th episode of Bang the Book Radio content. Now, that does include our original college football and NFL podcasts. Also includes all editions of the Bettors Box, as well as the Betting the Buckets NBA segment that we used to have. But we're approaching our 1,000th episode of content here. We've been doing the daily shows for just about 2 years now. So a heartfelt thanks to everybody that's been on the show as a guest and everybody that's listened to the show. Certainly means a lot to me. And I'll let you know, I think one day later this week is actually our 1,000th edition of Bang the Book Radio content. So once again, my thanks and heartfelt gratitude to everybody involved with this project. We got two guests on the program here today. Go ahead and bring on the first one. That is Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam, congratulations. 1,000 days of work, huh? We were just talking before we went on, but it's a blur now. Everything's rocking and rolling. Here, let me ruin your day. The NBA and college hoops are about to start, too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I was telling you before the show, and you know, one of the things that's really hard about covering every market, and I know you went through this with the Golden Knights last year and their playoff run, and I mean, I will tell you that the hardest day of work that I've had, and look, I love my job. I mean, I get to talk sports every day. You and I talked about this a little bit last week. The hardest day of my job was working after the Indians lost Game 7 in 2016. I was in near tears every time I talked about that game or really sports in general. You don't get time to decompress. It's just from one thing on to the next.
No, it's endless. And you know, the thing is, we talk about the convenience aspect of it and the mobile apps. It's like you have a sports book at your fingertips. I mean, you go back 5-6 years and go, I found something. Then you got to make time to run somewhere to get it in. I mean, literally, I mean, you don't have to get off your fanny anymore.
All right, well, let's talk some NFL here. We'll go ahead and get that portion of the show started. We got a full-fledged card here this week. Couple of teams on byes. I believe it's 15 games again this week, much like it was last week. Let's go ahead and start. You know, you did a couple of videos over at bangthebook.com on our YouTube page for us, touching on a couple of these games that we're going to hit on here. Let's go into Sunday, and let's talk about game 255-256. The Chicago Bears taking on the Miami Dolphins. Chicago off of a bye. We've seen this number go up from 2 to 3 with extra juice. Brian, how much is a bye week worth to you?
It's a great question. Extra time is a big deal. The one thing I would say to you, Adam, it depends on the team. It depends on their circumstances, obviously. But generally speaking, early buys are just not a good thing. I mean, the Bears are loving life. I mean, the last thing they wanted to do was stop playing. And you just start to find a rhythm. And especially this year, we talked about preseason was really unique in that most teams just didn't play guys. So they were just starting to find a groove and a rhythm, but we're still trying to figure out who all these teams are. Now maybe we kind of have that clue what these teams are all about. So the Bears shut down. Early in the season, buys can be pretty rugged. Obviously, with the football players, every hit's a car accident. I mean, the later the buy, the better one would think, especially for teams that are in contention to get that little chance to rejuvenate, maybe get an element of health. So I think it's worth something. I think it's worth a lot at various times of the year. Frankly, earlier in the year, it's not that big a deal to me.
Well, and that's the thing, too. I mean, you think about it as just a week off, and everyone kind of looks at it and says, okay, well, you know, the bumps and bruises that they do have, they can get healthy with those. But bye weeks are really complex because, as you mentioned, sometimes you don't want one. Sometimes you want to keep playing. And how many times have we seen in, say, you know, the Major League Baseball playoffs, something like that, you've got a team that rolls to the end of the season, rattles off 6, 7, 8 in a row to get into the playoffs. If they win their division, they don't play for 4 or 5 days. And that can be something that really stunts. Now, I'm not a huge believer in momentum. And I mean, we've seen studies about it being kind of disproven a little bit. But it is one of those things where you get a lot of positive feelings going. You get everything going in the right direction. And then it all stops. And that rhythm is over for you. And for the Chicago Bears here, 3 straight wins, that gritty road win on the road in or that gritty road win in Arizona, come back, blow out Tampa Bay, hang 48 points when you had played a bunch of close games earlier in the season. You get that blowout, and then all of a sudden it's a bye week. And we saw this with the Eagles, actually, in Carson Wentz's rookie year. They were 3-0 going into the bye. Wentz looked fantastic. And then they added some new things to the playbook. They kind of got out of that rhythm a little bit. And then all of a sudden the Eagles became a very pedestrian team for the rest of the season. So they are very complex. And, of course, as you mentioned, you know, not just does it matter with the team, it also matters with the coach, because some coaches can keep their teams up. Other coaches, you know, maybe kind of let the inmates run the asylum a little bit.
Yeah, it's a real gray area. I think it shuts down a streak. I mean, they're playing good. Now, you want to sit there and go, the Bears could be 4-0. I mean, they were kicking themselves. And it's like, oh, boy, how encouraging was that? Khalil Mack, he showed up, and, boy, he was dominant. But, boy, they had the Packers, and they let him off the hook. And then they go win the next three. I mean, they could be 4-0. So I don't think the bye week helps them in any way, shape, or form. But one thing I would say is, as good as it's looked, honestly, you sit there, you look at the first four games, and you go, who have they beaten? You know, okay, I mean, and now you're laying 3 on the road. I say this every year, Miami's the worst home field advantage in the NFL. You know, once these guys start pedestrian, even if they're a 500 team, there's a lot of green and orange seats down in Miami. You're coming off a bye. Maybe you lost whatever rhythm you had, and Miami's going to have a stone in their shoe for the way they let one get away at Cincinnati. I don't know about laying 3 on the road. It's not a game I'm going to get involved with, but as good as it looked for Chicago, just don't go too overboard. There's a set of circumstances here. It makes this a pretty bizarre handicap.
Yeah, it really does. And I mean, again, for contest players, you know, when you're looking at 15 games and you got to find a way to pick 5 of them, you know, it's very hard to cross games off the board. But this is one that, while I respect the line move and while I completely understand it, and it certainly looks like we'll get to 3.5 before we get back to 3 flat here in this game, it's a tough spot for the Bears. You generally don't think about coming off of a bye being a tough spot. But like you said, you've got a Miami team now that's a little bit disenfranchised with how last week went. 2 weeks ago, they got blown out by New England and looked like they were going to bounce back. They played a very good first half in that game against Cincinnati. Then it all got away from them. So, you know, what do they look like here coming out back on their home field? Although, as you said, not much of a home field advantage. So those are things you want to keep in mind that, you know, a lot of times I think people just automatically assume that bye weeks are good things. And that's not always the case.
No, I mean, spot on. I mean, I think, right now, I think teams with rest in college football is a much bigger deal, I'd say at least for the next 3-4 weeks. And we'll watch the NFL, and we'll start to monitor this. And I mean, we always know about – there are things that history repeats itself. You know, Andy Reid off a bye, you know, those kind of things that we get all those numbers and trends. There'll be things we pay attention to. But college football, like, for example, Penn State, they got to play Michigan State. Honestly, that bye probably was the best thing that ever happened to Penn State after giving that game away against Ohio State, to just get away from it. Less than help, it was the mental break. And then Penn State can put that behind them, and at least the mindset will be to start their season all over again against Michigan State and maybe make a push to try to get back into the playoff picture.
All right, let's transition to a different game here. We actually don't have bye weeks in play for this one. We do have something of a short week for the Houston Texans, who played on Sunday night and won maybe the ugliest football game I've ever seen over the Dallas Cowboys there on Sunday Night Football. They host
now,
the
wait
Buffalo
a minute.
Bills.
Wait, hold on. Hold
Go
on.
Ahead.
No, wait a minute. That All was right. ugly Sunday night. Sunday afternoon, the Bills and the Titans gave it quite a run for its money.
I mean, see, but here's the thing, though, and I know this is going to cut right to the core of you, Brian. I just expect Bills games to be ugly.
Yeah, that's true. And so, but you can take that as an opportunity. I will say this, that game against Tennessee, if you went off the premise and you looked at it, and people would say, oh, the Bills went to Green Bay, they got hammered 22-0. But if you watch that game, I mean, the offense was a nightmare. But the Bills' defense held Aaron Rodgers to 22 points at home. That is giving your team a chance to win a game. So now they're coming home, and you're asking Mariota to go against that defense in front of crazed fans. Believe me, as scary as this sounds, Buffalo was right at the top of my list last week. The Bills in the under is one of the best possible plays out there. And then the encouraging thing for them is at the end of the game, Josh Allen actually drove them down the field to win the game. So the kids got a little bit of confidence. Now, but it's like week to week, you don't know what you're going to get. But this Houston team is so bizarre right now. And if you watch the game, Deshaun Watson was a crash test dummy. I mean, this kid got mangled in that game. And the reality of it is the Bills' pass rush is pretty fierce. So, obviously, it's going to be on the defense again. Houston has no running game. Buffalo's got a good lockdown corner in Trey White, who'll go against Hopkins. I think you're looking at another – you know, the game like we saw Houston play and the game like we saw Buffalo play, this is going to be a field goal game.
Well, and, you know, it's one of those things, too, where, I mean, you look at this Houston team, and it's been a significant struggle this season. I mean, I think Bill O'Brien isn't long for coaching that team. Him and Jason Garrett both tried very, very hard to lose that game on Sunday night. That's one of the reasons why it was such an ugly game, because you're talking about, and I had a rant about this on yesterday's show, the guys that make decisions in these billion-dollar industries continuing to make stupid ones is one of the most amazing things to me in the world of professional sports or college sports, for that matter. And
Adam,
Bill O'Brien and Jason Garrett really tried to one-up each other.
It's been my pet peeve. I'm long in the tooth now, and I'm not kidding you. I mean, I was a little kid, my friends would be out, you know, running around, going to the park or whatever, and I'd be 8 years old, and I'd be sitting in the house watching NFL games. I mean, since I was 8. When I was 10, I knew how to call timeouts. Yeah, I'm serious. You watch this. They have no clue when to take timeouts. My biggest pet peeve are guys that frivolously throw timeouts away, and then at the end of the game, they don't have a timeout left when they could have got the ball back with a chance to win the game, but they used it on a 3rd and 17. Like, what play do you have that's going to work? It's going to be a draw or a screen. Take the 5-yard delay of game penalty and punt the ball. The timeout is an oxygen tank. You can't just give them away. And then the short yardage stuff. I mean, you watch that stuff at halftime with the Houston game. The ball's at the 4-inch line. Why is the quarterback in the shotgun? It's insanity to me that 70% of these teams won't ever use a quarterback sneak but have no short yardage offense. It's incredible. It's the most mind-boggling. I don't care if you're a Texas Tech or a Mike Leach team, and you can throw it for 700 yards a game. You're telling me with all those things that you installed, you can't have two plays in a package where the quarterback is under center and can do a quarterback sneak or give it to a fullback? Why do you snap the ball back 5 yards when some guy can come off the edge and tackle you for a 4-yard loss? It's brain dead. It's so frustrating when I watch this stuff.
Yeah. And, I mean, I watch a lot of college football, too. And to see that week in and week out with probably two-thirds, maybe even 70% of the teams in FBS that do that, where they still line up in the shotgun 4.5 yards, and instead they turn into 4th-and-4, 4th-and-5. Look, I get it. You want the running back to run downhill, but you probably have a 6'2" quarterback that if your offensive line gets any kind of push, it is an easy first down. You know, coaches just really don't bother doing it. So
Buffalo Army game a week ago. I literally almost threw the remote in the pool. They got a six. What is this kid? Tyree Jackson's a beast. He's like 6'6". But first down, they get the ball to like the 1-inch line, and then they come up and they go to the shotgun. Like, well, of all teams, why would you have this kid take a snap and jump over the pile like Breeze or Brady, or just fall forward? They snap it 5 yards back, and he throws a pass to the 3-yard line, and they tackle him at the 3. It's like, who makes this stuff up?
I don't know. I don't know. But I will ask you this here about this Buffalo and Houston game. No line out there in the offshore marketplace. What are you kind of expecting this line to look like here? I mean, like you said, you think it's going to be a low-scoring game, kind of a tight game, a couple of, we'll call them inefficient offenses, to put it nicely. So what do you think line kind of looks like when the market opens up?
Well, a lot's going to depend on Watson if he's, you know, in one piece. I mean, he's still in an ice tub. I think you probably were looking at something like maybe 8-9. I think 7.5. And there may be some money. I don't know if it gets to 7. But it's something in the 7.5-8 range. The total, I'd expect probably something in the 39.5-40 range. That would be my best guess.
All right, let's transition to the NHL side for a couple of minutes here. I do want to talk a little bit of pucks with you here since we're still early in the season. In fact, the season is not even a full week old yet. But a couple of interesting things that happened on Monday, and there will be this angle again coming up here this weekend. San Jose playing a 1 o'clock Eastern time puck drop against the Islanders. They lose 4-0. Golden Knights taking on Buffalo, 3 o'clock Eastern time puck drop. Buffalo wins that game 4-2. So early starts here for these West Coast teams out in the Eastern time zone on Monday, and again, will be a factor here over the weekend. So what do you think about that as this week goes along here, Brian? Do they get accustomed to that time change? Are they in better shape this weekend, or is it still just too much of a shock to the system?
The San Jose one was understandable, going west east and playing the early game. Vegas had played in Minnesota, so they kind of had a stop and a transition along the way. I wouldn't use that as an excuse. But Buffalo played a pretty good game, and it's one of these things. You look at a box. Oh, Vegas outshot them 37-17. Quality shots in the game. Buffalo had the better of the quality shots. Shots on goal is the most misleading statistic in any sport. You can get 25 flip shots from the point, and the goalie sees it and catches it. It's a shot on goal. I want to know how many times did a guy hit the post or fire it just wide from 15 feet. And if you watched that game yesterday, Buffalo had the better of the chances and won the game. There are other things that what I love so much about hockey, Adam, it's a weird thing. Buffalo actually plays very good in the day. They don't play very many of them, but they've always played good in day games. Philadelphia used to have, it probably will come up this year, and they get a lot of Saturday day games. Sunday day games. Those games, I don't know. It's something in the coffee. Those games are always like 6-2, 6-3. I always look to play a Philly day game over the total. I mean, it depends who they're playing. But there are a lot of things historically where certain teams match up against certain teams, scheduling situations. And literally, man, we're just out of the gate, in 3-4 games for these teams. And hockey's just off to the races. But you're still trying to figure out who are these teams. And injuries are becoming a big deal. I mean, my goodness, yesterday, Columbus loses Dubinsky. Then Riemsdyk is out for the Flyers. Quick is out for the Kings. Luongo's out for the Panthers. I would throw that one out there. Hutchinson will be the goalie. I'd be looking to play in the short term Florida Panthers games over the total. They can score, and now their backup's going to be the guy. And we'll see how he plays, but just generally speaking, I'm going to be paying attention to Florida here in the short term. And then the question becomes, you know, how much are the odds makers paying attention? I think it's a lot better than it used to be, but in the past, you'd see the news would come out, oh, backup goalie's playing for a team. The total was 5.5. You'd sit there, you look, nothing happened. Yeah, you think it'd be well, 5.5 over 30 or something, you know, maybe put a little juice on. Oh, the other backup's playing. And the total would never move. And you'd sit there and you'd be mystified, like, well, wait a minute. You're telling me the drop-off from the first-string goalie to the second-string goalie is not worth a half goal at least? They do a much better job of that, but there are still numbers that fall through the cracks in hockey, and it's one of my favorite things to watch and wager on.
Yeah, Anaheim's got a bunch of injury problems as well. Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaff both out for the Ducks right now, who did beat Detroit last night 3-2, but they had to get the extra point there for the shootout to do it. By the way, you mentioned Philadelphia in that early angle. I played a few first periods with them in those day games last year. One I remember very vividly, they were playing St. Louis, and they were ahead 3-0 after one. I think won that game, ironically enough, 6-3. By the way, Philadelphia plays Vegas at 1 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. So there's another one of those interesting daytime starts. But, Brian, as we look at the Tuesday night.
Real quick on that, I know you got to get going here. But real quickly, there's an odd dynamic now for Vegas. Flyers beat them. Sabres just beat it. So now you're going to get Vegas at that. And we talked about this all summer here. As great as things were for Vegas last year, they were getting thrown into the deep end of the pool with a home game and then a 5-game Eastern road swing. And they're 1-2, needed to pull the goalie and tie Minnesota before they beat them, then lose to Buffalo, have back-to-back games this week with Washington and Pittsburgh, then play the Flyers again, who just beat them, then have to fly cross-country back home, and the brutal game to play is the first game home from a long road trip. And they're sitting there and going to have to play Buffalo, who just beat them. I mean, there's a real, really interesting dynamic for, I think, the prospects of the entire season for the Golden Knights is this road trip.
Well, and I leave the analytics to the people that are much smarter than me. I've started to dig into them a lot more for the NHL because, I mean, it's just natural since I love them so much with baseball. People like Parker Michaels that we have at bangthebook.com, Rob Pizzola, several others that are out there that do a fantastic job with the analytics. I like the situational stuff because that's easier for me to pay attention to because I write the article every week at bangthebook.com. But that was the thing I noticed for Vegas here. You've got the East Coast road trip, Stanley Cup rematch against Washington, Fleury goes back home again to Pittsburgh, and then you've got a Philadelphia team with that rapid revenge angle and now a Buffalo revenge angle. So for Vegas, very interesting start to the year, as you mentioned. And you know, for those that maybe don't have a lot of time to dig into the NHL or don't have a lot of time to understand what all of the analytics mean, that situational part of the handicap can be really, really important when it comes to hockey. And there are a lot of angles that are out there.
Well, and I would even say it would be very intriguing, based on the start, what Gerard Gallant's going to do here. You know, Stanley Cup final rematch, off rest, probably Fleury. And then you go to Pittsburgh. At some point, you don't want to. It's early in the season. The guy should be fresh as a daisy. But do you want to run the guy into the ground early? Do you play Fleury on back-to-back nights? They may be throwing Subban to the Wolves against Pittsburgh on Thursday night. But they lose the Washington game. You start 1-3. You know, now you got to start thinking, what's he going to do with the goalie? And at some point, you go, when is the backup? When's Subban going to actually play a game?
Yeah, and you can hit overnights, too. If you think that you have an idea of how the coaches are going to do their goaltender rotations, sometimes they will announce them, obviously. But if you think you've got a lead on that, you know, you could play some overnights there, look to take your shot. And, of course, you've got the chance to buy out, keep your play, maybe get a little bit of an arbitrage, something like that, if you can sort of figure out how these coaches may set up their goaltender rotations. So, all right, Brian, let's touch on one other market here. Let's take a quick look at the CIMB Classic, a little bit of golf stuff to wrap up this segment. We're over in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia. The start of the Asian Swing, three straight events over on that side of the world. CJ Cup at Nine Bridges next week. WGC HSBC Champions the following week. We do have Justin Thomas on hand here this week in Malaysia, but he's plus 460. Brian, it's real hard to take an outright future in a golf tournament of plus 460.
No, that's crazy. I mean, no way. It can't be done. Current form matters in golf. Kevin Tway just won. He's 40-1. Snedeker let one get away. He's over there. He's 25-1.
Let me interrupt you for a second. Since we were talking so much about the NHL situational stuff, what about those angles? You know, I mean, you had a guy that just won. A lot of times I don't like to go back on the guy that won, especially if it's been a while, because you figure he's kind of got a little bit of that hangover. But what about a guy like Snedeker, who's in that playoff, doesn't get it done? You know, I mean, is that a letdown factor? Is that a motivating factor the next week? How do you play that?
It depends on the guy and what you think of what's between the guy's ears. You know, some guys won't recover from it. Some guys will be mad and come out and shoot 65 in the first round the next week and run away and hide. That's an intriguing one. The one that really compounds this is the travel. You know, these guys that played, you know, be flying halfway around the world to play this tournament. And as you alluded to, don't forget, this starts in essence tomorrow night. So don't get shut out. Think, oh, I can, you know, get this in first thing Thursday morning. Not the case. I'm going through the list, and it's early in the season. The one that jumped out at me is CT Pan at 40-1. I mean, this kid was right on the precipice of winning a couple of times this year. It was just one of these deals where it's a learning how to win kind of thing for this kid. But he's got the game, and that's a nice price. And it's going to be, and it's one of these things too, Adam, when we talk about the golf handicapping, we started doing this, over a year ago. I used to talk about Xander Schauffele all the time. Nobody knew who Xander Schauffele was. And, you know, then all of a sudden, now Xander Schauffele is 16-1. This time last year, Xander Schauffele would be 80-1 in every tournament. So now you're at the time of the year where Q School is going to come, and who are the new guys that qualify for the tour? Who are some of the up-and-coming guys? Who's going to be the next best thing? I mean, I go so far back because I follow the European Tour eons ago. No one had ever heard of Padraig Harrington. It was like eons ago. In the one year, I bet they used to have a prop up, will he win a major? And it's like 40-1. And you get four kicks at the can with Padraig Harrington. And he ended up, you know, winning a major. Attention to the guys that are you always try to be ahead of it. It's like football. The opening numbers come out on Sunday, and you're sitting there and you're looking at a game. I really like such and such a team. Okay, I'll get to it. Well, no, don't get to it. Bet it then, because if you think, okay, money's going to come in on this team, you want to get ahead of it and get the best of the numbers. So, I mean, part of handicapping, money management, all the stuff. But so much of this is getting the best of the number and trying to get on something before other people do.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And one of the things that's so tough about golf, and I mean, you can do this because you've got the long prices that are out there. But if you do isolate that guy, like you do with a CT Pan, or I think Cameron Smith's a pretty good pick this week at 33-1. He's a guy who had a few top fives early in the year last year and a couple top fives in the FedEx Cup playoffs. If you get on these guys early, you know, because of the big prices that you're paying, you probably want to stay on these guys. I mean, again, it's, you know, you're not making full unit risks on 50 or 60 or 70-1 guys, at least not in a traditional sense, but because you've got that big profit margin potential, if you think there's a guy that's going to be in good form, going to get himself to a win here at some point, you got to keep going back to him a little bit, you know, especially again, if you play a guy in 15 straight events for a half unit. Yeah. You know, it seems like it's a lot of investment in a player like that. But again, like you said, you know, you got 15 shots at it with a guy that you think is in pretty good form, as a guy that's kind of a little bit undervalued right now. You know, we may sound a little bit repetitive sometimes with these golf events, but when you isolate a guy, when you find a guy you like, you do want to keep going back to him. You don't just want to give up after one weekend.
All right, here, we'll do finally here. We'll do a little pop quiz. I mean, you know me. I'm always looking for something in the 30, 40, 50, or higher range, and then can come back and do in-tournament wagering and still find really nice prices on guys that were, you know, favorites. Maybe you can get an overlay price on them because they're three back. But pop quiz, who's the better golfer, Justin Thomas or Ryan Moore?
Oh, Justin Thomas.
Justin Thomas. Justin Thomas is 5-1. Ryan Moore is 14-1. Ryan Moore just played in the playoff this past week and is now going to play in the CIMB Classic. Unless you're Ryan Moore's cousin, you wouldn't know that Ryan Moore has won the CIMB twice in his career. So you've got a guy that's in good form going to a course that obviously suits his eye. I'm not in the business of, you know, playing Ryan Moore at 14-1. You find a Ryan Moore Justin Thomas matchup and you get plus $1.70 with Ryan Moore, you shouldn't be playing Ryan Moore.
That makes perfect sense. I mean, again, you know, that's the one thing about golf and why, you know, maybe it's not everybody's cup of tea here that listens to the show, but there are so many opportunities in golf. Whether you take an outright and maybe get some kind of hedging potential on Sunday, or you play the matchups or some of the props that are out there, or, of course, as Brian does with the in-tournament wagering. And, again, with these events over on the Asian swing, or, you know, sometimes when you look at European tour events with big-time travel, time changes, things of that sort, get a feel for how this tournament's going first and then go ahead. You may get Justin Thomas. In fact, you probably will get Justin Thomas at a better price at some point over the course of this tournament, unless he goes out and hangs a 62 or a 63, something like that here on, you know, Wednesday night for us, Thursday over in Malaysia. So I think you're onto something
perfect,
with that strategy.
Real quick, bud, a perfect example of that was the Ryder Cup. And it was the last round of the Ryder Cup. And Justin Rose, number one player in the world, had to grind his way through the final tournament to win the FedEx Cup. And now, and you watch Tiger be tired and out of sorts as he was playing. Well, Justin Rose went through every bit of the gauntlet that Tiger had gone through the week before, but he's playing with partners and they were able to get around what he was doing. And Webb Simpson played Saturday and he played really good on Saturday, but on Sunday, now it's a singles match and you got to do it all by yourself over 18 holes. Justin Rose is the better golfer than Webb Simpson, but situational handicap, and the guy was just exhausted, wasn't playing great. Webb Simpson looked good Saturday, but Webb Simpson was plus $1.45 in the head-to-head matchup on Sunday. I mean, like you said, it's not everybody's cup of tea, but that's why I always go back. I probably play total 70% of the time, and analytics and all this other stuff, there is nothing better that you can use when you're handicapping than are the two eyes that God gave you. You know, we can overthink this stuff till the cows come home. Sometimes it's right in front of your face.
Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how can people find those two programs?
Sportsbookradio.com. They're archived there, Adam. And there's KSHP.com, and there's an app, KSHP Las Vegas. And I always put the shows up on my Twitter account, at Brian Blessing. And as you said, we did videos for this week. We did NFL and college football, early look at the numbers and where we think the lines are going to move.
And you can find that over on YouTube.com by searching Bang the Book at Brian Blessing on Twitter. Brian, appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
You're the best, Adam. Good luck on show number 1001.
Brian Blessing, host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. A lot of fun to have on the program here every Tuesday. We got one more guest here for this edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is professional handicapper Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Rolf, how's it going today, man?
Besides the Indians going down, still have football seasons ahead of us and looking good.
Yeah, let's go ahead and talk about that for a minute. I mean, obviously I don't want to rehash the series because I'm not real thrilled with how it went. But, you know, you're somebody that's been in this handicapping world for longer than I have. I've been doing it for about a decade now. I'm not going to date you. I'll be nice about that here on today's show. But the thing that I've kind of been thinking about here a little bit today is that I don't have time to decompress from that. You know, it's just the next day. Sports are still going on. There are things to talk about, things to write about, all that type of thing. It's almost like, and again, I really enjoy what I do. I love my job. I love being able to interact with my guests here on the show and do the writing. But But I've become so mechanical of a fan, I guess I would call it. There's so little emotional attachment anymore for me, except for with the Indians. And it's such a hard thing to try and handle, decompress from, keep out of your mind from a handicapping standpoint. It's not easy sometimes to keep that fandom hidden.
Yeah. In fact, it'll actually help me in the long run. I was had such a negative connotation going into this game that when Houston tied at 2-2, I turned it off and started working on college basketball, new head coaches. So, hey, it got me a jump on college hoops. And, I felt Houston was by far the better team would win, but it's disappointing getting swept.
It is. I mean, it's one of those things where I couldn't look away. I mean, it was kind of like that car accident that you just can't look away from. So I wound up sticking it out through the game and then doing my usual Monday afternoon writing late into the night. But, you know, it's just one of those things where, again, I mean, and this certainly helps me in the long run from a handicapping standpoint. I only see numbers in teams, man. I see numbers that I'm putting into an algorithm at this point in time. And maybe I've trained myself to be like that. Maybe being a Cleveland sports fan has me so jaded that it's really just the only way to go about doing it. But I don't see personalities. I don't see, you know, I don't see my fandom really. I just see numbers and stats and pieces of a puzzle. And you know, it helps from a clarity standpoint. But at the same time, there are some times where I kind of wish I could, you know, still have a little bit of that youthful innocence, I guess I would say, about sports and about being able to watch them.
Yeah, my problem is I always look for the negatives in the Indians. And, you know, you watch these other players and other teams, and people do what they did in the regular season. But, you know, we have Jose Ramirez, who's hitless in how many games, and Kluber hit two at-batsmen all regular season, and he hits two in one game, and you know, people getting walks when they never give up walks. So it just seems like our team changes when it comes to the postseason, and that's the negative part of it for me. You know, if we went down on these games losing 5-4 and we were in them and, you know, they made a better play at the end, but I just am so disappointed in the way we showed up in the postseason.
All right, let's get away from that. Let's chat NFL. And ironically enough, we're going to talk about another Cleveland team here, just because I think this is a really intriguing handicap, a very interesting type of game here between the Chargers and the Browns. This is game 253, 254 on the board. Cleveland is the preferred side here so far. We haven't crossed a key number or anything like that. However, the Browns are the preferred side here in this situation. This number from Chargers minus two to a pick 'em pretty much market wide.
Well, you know, the Browns out here in Vegas have been a fan darling all off season. You know, we do a lot of radio shows with sports book directors and talked about how the Browns got Super Bowl odds and to win the division and the over under in their wins. And it's just held true. People have this infatuation with the Browns that they want to see them succeed. Now, I truly believe that after that 0-for season, you know, looking like how they did. And I think the whole world knows the Browns realistically could be undefeated. That's crazy to say, but the Pittsburgh game missed field goal and extra points, and New Orleans, the same thing. And then the Oakland game getting robbed twice. People keep falling back to that. Although I am not a Browns backer this week, I'm actually backing the Chargers, and it's quite simple why. I mean, San Diego's playing at a level that they haven't played with in a few years. They're only plus 39 yards per game, but that's because they're 3-2 and they lost two losses. Well, when you're 3-2 and your only two losses are to the two undefeated teams in the NFL, being the LA Rams and Kansas City, that's not bad. Oh yeah, and by the way, against Kansas City and the LA Rams combined, they are actually plus 7 yards per game. So they have the yardage edge against those two teams. They went to Buffalo, they won. They knocked off in-state rival San Francisco. They knocked off in-state rival Oakland. And I don't think there's any issue with Phillip Rivers going on the road with his stellar 11-2 ratio and his incredible completion percentage facing the Browns. Baker Mayfield's great, but you know what? We saw him getting sacked 5 times this year. The Browns have already allowed 21 sacks. Put it in perspective, the LA Chargers have allowed 7 sacks on the season.
Well, and this is one of those games where I think, you know, I kind of looked at this one, and my initial thought was, well, the Chargers don't have the same pass rush without Joey Bosa. So maybe Baker Mayfield does have some time to throw here in this spot. Maybe this is a little bit better of an opportunity for him. But then also you look at it and say, well, you know, and you talk about this all the time, you need to learn how to cover on the road before you can learn to win on the road. And when it comes to the Browns, obviously they're at home in this situation, but they just beat the Baltimore Ravens. And they don't beat the Baltimore Ravens often. They don't win AFC North games. I think it's the first one they've won since, what, 3 years ago? I think October 2015, something like that. They don't win those division games. So you kind of look at it now and say, okay, well, should be an increased level of confidence here with the Browns coming into this spot. But also, you know, learning to win is one thing. Learning how to win consistently is another. So you kind of wonder here if just naturally, based on the historic trend of this organization, if this is kind of a letdown spot as well.
Well, you know, we saw a celebration after New York, after the Jets win, and I'm sure we saw a celebration with Baker Mayfield's first home start being a win. But, you know, the Browns are still – they're averaging 4.6 yards per carry on the season, which looks good, but they had 6.7 in that Oakland game. So you throw that out because the Chargers rush defense is much better than San Diego. So when you have the run game that can't take over the game, now you're putting Baker Mayfield in a situation where, let's say, they have the lead. That's something he's never done. You know, he's never played with a touchdown lead. It's a different ball game when you're the quarterback. And you talked about learning how to win. Well, that's why teams struggle to learn how to win. When Baker Mayfield's in behind the score, scrambling around, he's a different quarterback. The offense is a little different. But let's see how they act if they get a touchdown and they're up 7-0 after the first quarter. Can they just go back to basics, run an offense, and be productive? That's something that has to be seen. And, again, that's why I'll fade them until they prove they can do that.
And what about this game from a total standpoint? Because you've got the Chargers coming cross country here. We've seen this total come down a little bit from 46 to 44 and a half. And in fact, for those that are paying attention to the betting market out there, we actually saw a lot of totals come down just a little bit from the opening number there. Some cases a half point, some cases a point and a half like this game. What do you think about that total coming down here? I mean, is this a byproduct of the Chargers making that cross country trip and having an early kick? Or is this, you know, there's some belief in that Greg Williams defense for Cleveland.
Oh, I'm a believer in that defense, no question. You know, they gave up to 565 yards against Oakland, and our secondary is still an issue. But, you know, the performance, you know, they still give up 410 against Baltimore, but it's that bend and don't break defense. You know, we're used to seeing, I'm not going to compare them to the Patriots, but the Patriots are one of those teams that would always be number 20 or 25 in yards per game allowed, but they were top 10 in points per game allowed because when you get down to the red zone, you shut down those opponents. Well, they didn't do it against New Orleans, but hey, allowing 21 to Pittsburgh, who we saw just ate up Atlanta, allowing 18 to the New Orleans Saints, who we watched last night on Monday Night Football, and allowing 12 to Baltimore, are, again, very, very good numbers. San Diego, again, I think a little bit is, look what you've done for me lately as well. You saw the Chargers win 26-10. You saw Cleveland win 12-9. It's hard to post a bigger number when those are the two scores for your teams last week.
All right, so let's move on from that game here, and let's talk about a pretty interesting handicap between the Seahawks and the Raiders. And, you know, I'll admit, I mean, being caught up in the Indians playoff chase and all the other things that are going on here in the sports betting market, it took me a while to realize that this game here is in London because I was looking at it and I'm looking at the odds screen. I'm like, why the hell is there a 1 o'clock start time in Oakland? And then it finally hit me that, you know, this is the first of the London games that we've got for this season. So this is a completely unique and different type of handicap with this matchup over in Wembley. So first and foremost here, Rolf, London, how do you factor it into the handicap?
Well, again, you have to look at the weather, which is number one. I did go look at the early forecast right now. Winds 15 miles an hour, gusting up to 25. So winds can be an issue. Now, since they started these London games, the home team is 10-11 against the spread. And you think, why does that matter for the home team? But this is something I just learned last year. I mean, we've been in the NFL for what now, 7-8 years with these London games, but the home team actually has some obligations to fill. They have to do some charity work in London. They have a few days of events that they go to that they actually have to take time out of their prep to go do it. The road team is not obligated to do that. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. So while there is a home team and you don't think it matters, there is a slight disadvantage to being the home team. Hence, I think that's part of the reason they're 10-11. Now, the totals are almost 500 as well. It's only one game under. But the last 10 of 15 games have gone over. The concern earlier when they were playing was the grass was a little too high. They've learned to adjust that. And while this was supposed to be the first game ever, NFL game ever, in the Tottenham Stadium, the new stadium, that has delays, so they're back to Wembley, which we're used to seeing the NFL play in. So, you know, sometimes teams have buys before, sometimes they have buys after. It depends on what the team wants. But other than that, unless there's an egregious scheduling difference, I don't handicap it any differently than a regular game.
Well, let me ask you about this, because this is an angle that I played a few times last year. I think I caught a couple of cheap super contest wins out of it. Teams that have been to London before does seem like they've had a little bit more success because they know the lay of the land. They've got some idea of the travel. Obviously, for these two teams, very significant travel going from the West Coast out to London. Of course, you know, and you had Seattle at home last week against the Rams. You had the Raiders taking on the Chargers. So they were still out in the state of California. So significant travel for this one for both of these teams. Not always the case. For example, the Chargers play in London next week, but they'll already be halfway there. Not halfway there, but they'll already be part of the way there with a stopover in Cleveland. So you definitely want to see when the Chargers plan to go to London, what their practice schedule looks like, stuff like that for next week, which we will talk about for our week 7 shows. But Oakland here, 3 games outside of the United States. They've played in Mexico City each of the last 2 years. Haven't played in London since 2014. Seattle has never played a game outside of the US. So does that factor into the equation at all for you?
Well, it would if the coaching staff were the same, because then you have the same routines and you go through the same building blocks. But with Gruden and the entire new coaching staff, to me, it's not going to be any different than a new team. Yes, the players were there, but again, it's all the setup and the prep. We have this bagged. We're going to do this. You guys only got to pack this. We're going to meet here. We're going to get on the plane. We're going to do this on the plane, blah, blah, blah. When we get there, we're going to do this. But without the Oakland staff having that experience, that doesn't mean as much to me.
All right, so what do you make of the line move in this game? Seattle was a 3-point favorite, flat juice, minus 110. Seeing some 2.5s out there, those are minus 125 on the Seattle side. Seeing a lot of 3s out there, but the extra juice now on the Raiders side. Do you agree with that line move here?
You know, I've gone back and forth in this game, and, you know, you look at the Raiders 2 different ways. They're 1-4. And the NFL admitted they made a mistake, so they should be 0-5. But when you look at the 0-5 team, they're actually out first downing their opponents by over 2 per game, and they're plus 7 yards per game on the season. So on one side, yes, they're a very bad team. On the other side, they're a yardage edge, and they should be 500 or close to 500 within a game, and they're not. You know, the Seattle sign, not often does the losing team get a buy sign put on them. But I think what they did against the Rams, I think Russell Wilson proved he's back into his playing mode where he can actually win games for the Seahawks. You know, the Rams going for it on fourth down in their own territory last week shows me how much they didn't want to give the ball back to Russell Wilson. You know, yes, of course you have Marshawn Lynch against his past opponent. But, you know, I look at the Seattle defense and they gave up 271 yards to the Bears. They gave up 303 yards to Dallas, 263 yards to Arizona. Yeah, they gave up 30 first downs and 468 yards to the Rams. But at least 18 or 20 NFL teams would give up that much. So I am actually leaning with Seattle at this point. I think the defense is starting to learn. The players that are gone aren't coming back. They know they've had the injuries this year and even more injuries of the past few weeks. But they're still doing enough to win, and I give an edge on Russell Wilson over Derek Carr, who Derek Carr this year, 6-7 ratio doesn't get it done.
All right, last thing I'll ask you about with regards to the London games here, and we'll talk about this angle you know, next week as well, because Philadelphia and Jacksonville will play there October 28th. Tennessee and the Chargers, that's next week's game. Tennessee, never been over there. The Chargers haven't been over there since 2008. So the players that are on that roster have not had the chance to go over and play in London. You know, you got to get tickets for friends and family that want to come along and all those types of things. So there's a new set of challenges with that. So I guess my question here to you, Rolf, then we'll transition over to college football. Looking at the Chargers this week, looking at Tennessee this week, do you think there's any kind of look-ahead factor for those two teams being a little bit excited about going over to play in London?
You know, I don't know that. I read a lot of the papers, and, you know, people say, well, you know, it's another game. But that's one of those things I don't think comes out in public. I don't think people – clearly before a previous game, they're never going to say they're looking ahead. But I'll tell you what I will do. For next week's show, I'll go ahead and look how teams do the week before London, both home and on the road, and we'll talk about it next week.
That sounds good. I'd be curious to find that out because, I mean, look, you know, when you talk about the NFL season, and I'm a big believer in the circadian rhythm and the body clock, like I've mentioned here before on the show, but also, I mean, this is something really unique. And yes, you're a professional and every game matters, but this is something that's a little bit, you know, extra special. You get to take your family over there, your kids over there. You know, it's something that kind of breaks up the relative monotony of the season. And of course, you know that you've got your bye week after the fact as well. I know when the Browns went there last year, you know, I, from having friends that worked in the front office and in the sales department, you know, they were just kind of telling me about, you know, how the players are approaching it. The staff got to go as well. Jimmy Haslam paid for that. You know, it was a really big deal. I mean, it was a huge deal organizationally for these teams. And to be a couple of teams like the Titans and the Chargers that don't do it often, or like the Seahawks and the Raiders, you know, there's a little bit of something special added to it, I think. So I'd be really curious to find out what that data may look like.
You know, one thing I just thought of, and again, this is just off the top of my head, you know, perhaps it's not such a disadvantage to go from the West Coast. When you fly from New York, you're probably talking 5.5 hours. Perhaps both of these teams from the West Coast have their flights taking off where it's nighttime. The players stayed up. They're leaving at midnight. They sleep on the plane. It's an 8-hour flight. They get up in the morning, and you don't have that midday transition where you're trying to play catch up to the new time zone. No idea if that's the case, but if I were a manager, I would look into that situation.
No, that's interesting. I mean, as I'm trying to look here through the winners and the results that we've had, I mean, the Rams have played a couple times over there. They've been very competitive. They won their game 33-0 last year against Arizona. It was a 17-10 loss in 2016. But again, that was one of those angles that I looked to play, is that the Rams had just been there the previous year. The Cardinals had not. So the Rams, with a little bit of a better idea of what to expect, the lay of the land, all that type of thing. So I do think that's a betting angle. I think we'll probably see that talked about a lot when it comes to Jacksonville, when they take on the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles have never been there either. So, you know, we know Jacksonville is kind of the home team over there at this point. So that'll be an interesting conversation for that week of October 28th, but you know, always such a complex type of handicap for this London game. And again, we'll have some better information for our listeners on the show next week. So Rolf, with that, let's transition over to the college football side of things here. And let's start with a game that we scratched the surface on a little. Actually, you know what? Let's go ahead and start with tonight's game. Just to throw something to our listeners that listen day of, listen right away. Arkansas State's up to a 10-point dog now. A lot of people I talk to do have this number lower. But, man, Appalachian State's getting a lot of love this week again.
Well, App State deserves that love because, at least on paper, They have been a dominant team. In my, I do a stat compare sheet, which just has the NSA numbers and my numbers as well. And Appalachian State right now is plus 51.2 yards per game. That's number two in the country behind Alabama. And if you look at their points per game, they're plus 34.8 points per game. That's number two in the country as well. So when you're number two in yards per game and points per game, obviously you've been lighting up the scorebook. I, you know, this is a situation where, you know, for those listeners, you know, Arkansas State losing at Georgia Southern was a positive thing for me. We talked about how high I was in Georgia Southern and I actually picked them to win the Sun Belt. But now they're off a loss and they're back at home. And they have a very strong home field edge. And I think they have enough to get it done. I mean, Justin Hansen has 11-2 ratio and completing 65%. You look at Appalachian State, excuse me, and they, yes, they outgained Penn State and they only lost by 7. That was obviously a Penn State not preparing for this App State team. But their last three games have been against Sisters of the Poor teams at Charlotte, Gardner-Webb, South Alabama. This is their first road game in 3 weeks. And, you know, Zach Thomas is doing great, but he's got an 8-3 ratio, and they're averaging 6.5 yards per carry. But, again, 9.0 against Gardner-Webb, 7.6 against South Alabama. I think Arkansas State is not only a solid play, I actually think they're a live dog this week coming off the loss.
All right, let's go to Thursday here. This is a game that we scratched the surface on yesterday. We didn't really have a line out for it because there are a lot of injury concerns for both sides here in this matchup between Texas Tech and TCU, game 105-106. Market pretty much 7 across the board, varying juice. Five Dimes dealing 7.5 with their usual teaser protection juice, which I really don't think they need to do for college football, but they still seem to be doing it here at this point in time. But TCU is a touchdown favorite here. Both of these teams off of extra rest. What do you think about game 105-106, Rolf?
Well, Sean Robinson, TCU's quarterback, Gary Patterson said he should be able to play. He may not start, and we may have to rotate quarterbacks. I think that's probably a negative going between two guys back and forth. As far as TCU, you know, you have Alan Bowman who started the last few games. He spent 4 days in the hospital with a collapsed lung. He actually is expected to be ready. You have McLean Carter, their week one starter. He has a high ankle sprain. It looks like he's not going to be healthy enough to run. And when you have an ankle sprain and you're a mobile quarterback, if you're not 100% healthy, don't put you out there. That's a detriment. And then you also have Jeff Duffy, who, you know, may play as well. So, again, you don't know what's going to happen. But this game clearly is a game of offense versus defense. Texas Tech at 591 yards per game, but they're allowing 448. Their losses to Mississippi and West Virginia, they allowed 47 and 42 points. While Mississippi and West Virginia both have offenses multiple times better than TCU. TCU looked good in that Ohio State game with 511 yards and 22 first downs. But you got to remember, there was a 95-yard touchdown run. There was another big touchdown pass. The last 2 weeks against Texas and Iowa State, they only put up 372 and 299 yards per game. If Texas State is a favorite, I never trust them to be able to hold a lead. But with Texas State, with Texas Tech, excuse me, as a dog, I think their offense can score enough. Excuse me, guys. And I don't think TCU's offense can keep up with them. So I am a Red Raiders fan this week.
Well, and the question that I was going to ask you is, you know, you get these games sometimes over the course of the season where maybe I'm not a big enough believer in Cliff Kingsbury, and I do like David Gibbs, the defensive coordinator, but Gary Patterson is a top 10, top 15 type of coach. I don't think that there are a whole lot of people that would dispute that fact, and you've got extra prep time here. And Patterson is the defensive-minded guy, which – I tend to think, and maybe I'm wrong here with this, maybe you have a different opinion. I tend to think that if you've got a coaching mismatch where it's predominantly on the defensive side of the ball and there's extra preparation time involved, I do like to side with the defensive coach there in that situation with a guy like Gary Patterson. The problem, of course, TCU's offense, you know, with the quarterback injury, not exactly sure how well they'll be able to keep pace if they have to. But that's always such an interesting thing for me is looking at bye weeks and their impact when it comes to college football.
Well, you go back to last year and TCU went to Texas Tech. They were off a loss at Oklahoma playing their second straight road game. They only put up 289 yards, but they held Texas Tech to 327 yards and 3 points. They won that game 27-3. That was Texas Tech's season low last year. So, yes, he does know how to stop it. But, you know, they're a different team this year with, you know, they only had 11 starters back, 6 on the defensive side. Texas Tech, well, yes, we've seen some improvement. Well, there should be improvement because they had 10 starters back on the defensive side. But, you know, TCU is 2-11-1 as a home favorite just because of not getting margin. The games he wins, like Iowa State last week, 17-14, he doesn't get margin. So even if they have a 10 or 13-point lead going into the third quarter, you know, there's always that back door opened. Yes, they may win the game, but I'll gladly grab the points.
All right, let's go to Saturday here, and let's go to a pretty interesting game in the ACC. And this is one, again, we touched on yesterday a little bit in the pick six segment with Kyle Hunter, but we can take a little bit more of a detailed look at it now. Game 117-118, Miami's on the road in Charlottesville to take on Virginia. This number opened 7, down to 6. Rolf, is this some sort of, you know, setup where the market's kind of getting massaged a little bit for a bigger limit bet on Miami later in the week? Or does this look like a true position to you?
I think it's a true position, and I'm a Cavaliers fan as well. I mean, coming off, there's no bigger situation. While this was close to being my situation play, since we were using it, I'm not talking about it. But Miami of Florida off that comeback against Florida State, their biggest rival. And you have to remember, Miami's looked good, yes, and they have one loss. But their only true road game this year was at Toledo. They've been at home against FIU, North Carolina, Florida State. Anyone's going to look good being home for 3 straight games in those situations. Now let's go on the road, and this is the first hostile setting you're going to face. You know, yes, you faced LSU as a neutral setting, and yes, you went to Toledo, but that's nothing like going into Virginia. This is a very improved Virginia team at 3-2, and their losses this year were at Indiana, at NC State. I think with Virginia, I think Mendenhall in his third year has shown the improvement he needs to. He had 8 back on the defensive side. They're only allowing 3.8 yards per carry. They're allowing under 59% completions, numbers I love. And on the offensive side, you know, with Jordan Ellis and, you know, with 5.8 yards per carry, the team is averaging 5.4, and the team is averaging 61.3 yards per game. I think Miami, we're going to see them struggle a little bit. They did against Florida State, but now for their first true road test, it's a whole different story for that Miami offense.
Well, and here too, I mean, this is one of those things where when we talk about Miami from last year, a lot of skeptics about Miami throughout the year. You know, they had the turnover chain. They had a big turnover margin, too. They weren't really winning games in impressive fashion. They didn't really have that eye test, that body of work, that resume. And it's setting up to be the same way here again this year. I don't think that LSU is a great team. I still have LSU 20th in my power ratings. But to be a team as talented as LSU, to not be up there in the top 15, knocking on the door of the top 10, that's not a good look for the Tigers. But Miami looked horrendous in that week one game. And Miami really hasn't, they've had no reason to show me how much they may have improved from that week one game. Whereas when you're Virginia and you're operating at a talent deficiency, Miami can win on talent. They can beat inferior teams just by having better athletes. Virginia can't do that. And they've got to scrap and scratch and claw for every win that they get. And Bronco Mendenhall is the right kind of dude for a team like that. And this is a game that, you know, it's kind of interesting because Miami's had some of these games. I mean, I think back to the game against Appalachian State, where Appalachian State was a very trendy underdog pick, and then Miami just took them to the woodshed because they were more talented. Does this game set up the same way? Does this game play out the same way? Maybe, but I can't lay 6 with Miami on the road here against, you know, a team that is an up and comer and against a guy as good as Bronco Mendenhall.
You know, you have to remember as well, we talked about first true road game. This is going to be the first start for Nkosi Perry. I mean, he came in, he played against Savannah State. He started against FIU or came in just after the first couple passes. So his true games, his two games that he started and played exclusively at home against North Carolina on the Thursday night. Yes, they won that game, but he was only 8 of 12. He wasn't forced to pass the ball because the rush attack took over. And against Florida State last week, what did he do? He was 13 of 32. So in your two games, you're 21 of 44, and those were at home against teams that you were a significant favorite against. Now you're making your first road start as a QB in FBS football. And again, just another situation I'll usually always fade.
All right, let's go to the SEC here, a little West versus East action game, 121-122, Texas A&M and South Carolina. A&M, 2.5-point road favorite here. This number opened 2. We found out this morning that Jake Bentley expected to be the starting quarterback for the Gamecocks, so they should have him back behind center here. Rolf, you and I were believers in Texas A&M last week against Kentucky. Wasn't pretty, but when you look at the box score for that game, I mean, Kentucky did not move the football at all. And I know I had people telling me after the game that, you know, everything I said about Terry Wilson last week really looked true in that game against Texas A&M. So Texas A&M not really getting a whole lot of respect for that win. They dominated that game. I've got some power ratings value here on Texas A&M. I'm probably not alone in that sentiment.
Yeah. When you hold your opponent to 178 yards and 8 first downs, and yet we need a very fortunate overtime result to win and cover. But like you said, those are times when you have advantages and you can get value with A&M because you look the week before, what did they do? Well, they only beat Arkansas by 7. But we saw Arkansas last week against Alabama is an improved team. The offense can move. So holding Arkansas the week before to 248 yards looks so much better than it did. Oh, yeah, and by the way, I mean, they held Alabama to 524. That's not great, but that's only Alabama's third highest number on the year. So their defense as a whole playing very well. You know, I think you have Kellen Mond now who forced some throws early, you know, with his 9-5 ratio, but he didn't put this team in bad spot this last week. You know, I don't know if Bentley coming back is good or not. I mean, you look at what Sarnecchia did last week, and he looked like the better quarterback to me, 27 of 47, a 4-0 ratio, 338 yards, and his YPA was a lot more than Bentley. So to me, you know, I think it actually may be a deterrent that Bentley's back, but with a 7-6 ratio. You know, I've gone back and forth in this game, and this is a game where I don't have an opinion on the side, but I do believe that it'll be a lower scoring game, and I lean with the under. I agree with you in A&M's offense, with South Carolina's defense. Yeah, they gave up a lot of yards to Georgia and Missouri, but Georgia and Missouri are much more elite offenses right now than A&M. And this is a SEC game with both teams off wins, Tennessee and Mississippi State on deck for the teams, and I certainly am leaning with the under in this game.
All right, let's go to game 155-156 here, Colorado and USC. And we talked a little bit about that Arizona State-Colorado game last week. I was having a hard time getting the Buffaloes into a favorite role, even being at home, just because I wasn't really convinced about that body of work. We get to this game here, 10:30 Eastern kickoff, so a little Pac-12 after dark. Colorado, ranked in the top 20, a 7-point underdog against a USC team that everybody thinks has been kind of a disappointment so far.
USC has been kind of a disappointment for the last, I don't know how many years. It's been incredible. I mean, USC right now, they're 5-14 ATS their last 19 games. And you look at their wins this year, at Arizona by 4, Washington State by 3 and UNLV by only 18. So every win they've had hasn't been a cover. I said I wasn't sure about Colorado last week. I mean, they were a very young team, returning, I think, the fewest starters or the second fewest in all of football with only 10 starters. The schedule, we didn't know what to make of it because Colorado State and then Nebraska without Martinez and UCLA still playing what they are. Arizona State's a decent team as well. It's by far the best team they're playing, but they've done nothing wrong to me. They've played to the level. You have Steven Montez, who's completing 75% with an 11-2 ratio. And, you know, you say JT Daniels is a five-star recruit, and Amon-Ra St. Brown is a five-star wide receiver, and Cedric Ware is a great running back. But right now, I mean, watching these teams play, I will take the trio of Steven Montez, Laviska Shenault, who, if you haven't watched him, has 51 catches already, 708 yards, and Trayvon McMillan with 528 yards, 6.3. It's incredible to say. You probably got 3 3-stars against 3 5-stars. But watching the games, I would take the Colorado trio. And, again, I just cannot back USC in a favorites role in any situation. Therefore, my default is to back Colorado.
And you know, Mike McIntyre is a guy, it's been up and down in Boulder, but as beautiful as Boulder is, and I have been there, and the area around campus is phenomenal, and everyone knows about the backdrop there at the field, but it's not an easy place to recruit. I mean, it's not the kind of place you're not going to have a lot of kids that are dying to go to a place that's cold in the wintertime with a lot of snow and all that type of stuff, especially with some of the other options that are available to you in the Pac-12. But you know, he had that one really, really good year, lost a lot of talent. Things kind of went down. I think Mike McIntyre is a very good coach. And I think that he's a guy that has maximized the talent that he's been able to get to Boulder. I cannot say the same about Clay Helton. Clay Helton has way too much talent for this USC team to be as mediocre as they've been in his tenure there in Los Angeles. So I also think there's a coaching edge for Colorado here too. And look, I know that we like to say that coaches don't pay attention to the spreads, don't pay attention to this and that. You mean to tell me that Mike McIntyre is not going to go to his team and say, hey, we're a touchdown underdog this week. We're a top 20 team. We're a touchdown underdog this week. There's got to be a chip on Colorado's collective shoulders here for this game. There just has to be.
You know, Goldsheet pointed out that on Colorado's roster, I'm looking up my notes real quick. On Colorado's roster, there are 35 players from California. So, you know, of your scholarships, 40% of them are from California, just adding another chip to that shoulder.
No, that's an excellent point right there. We got one more game to look at here in depth, and we'll talk about Rolf's situational and technical plays of the week. This is a game that, you know, I'm kind of surprised I wanted to talk about, but it's game 167-168, Ole Miss and Arkansas. We haven't spent too much time talking about either one of these teams here on the show. Not the most impressive bodies of work to this point. Ole Miss did just roll up 800 yards on Louisiana Monroe in scoring 70 points last week. But you mentioned Arkansas. And I think what we kind of had happen here with the Razorbacks, and this is something that we've talked about. I know Brad Powers looks at this a lot. When teams have that really bad loss, generally speaking to an FCS team, but in this case for Arkansas, losing to Colorado State was not a good look. Colorado State's not a very good team. And then getting blown out by North Texas. And then they lose to Auburn, A&M, and Alabama, as they should. But now they're back home against a more comparable opponent. We're seeing this number move down a little bit from 6.5 to 6. Is this a move that you agree with?
It is. You know, I mentioned this earlier. I mean, the Arkansas, you look at what Arkansas did against A&M and Alabama, and it's actually the buy side for me. And a lot of people don't realize that, you know, you have a new coach here. So, and you only had, well, you had 17 returning starters, but the 17 returning starters, you can't have a bigger swing in offensive philosophy going from Brett Bielema on the rush attack to Chad Morse with the run and shoot pass attack. It takes a long time that offense going. spring and August practices aren't going to cut adjusting that offense. Usually it takes a whole season to go into the second year and sometimes even the third year. You know, we saw that with Syracuse and Dino Babers, and I think they finally turned in the third year where they can be a productive team on offense and defense, and the schemes know each other and are familiar with it. Well, Arkansas is still going through all those growing processes, but you look at the last 3 weeks against Auburn. Yes, they lost 34-3, but they had a 65-yard edge. So they went to Auburn, they played A&M in neutral, and they played Bama. And in those three games, they're minus 100 yards per game. That's not bad for a team that was double-digit dogs in all those games. I think we start to see the step. I think we start seeing the offense. They threw 40 times last week against Alabama for 233 yards. They have the number one performance with 405 yards for Bama this year. So you don't always want to look at the yards they have. You want to look at where those yards rank against their opponents, what the other opponent has allowed. And when you go to Bama, when you're playing Bama at home and you put up the most yards than anyone has against Bama this year, that's a positive sign. And Ole Miss, you know, first things before even the lines come out, I'm looking the matchups. My note on this game to myself was Ole Miss allowing 504 yards per game, 28 yards per game, and away favorite question mark. There's no way in the world I can make that team an away favorite. What have they done? Well, they beat up the Sisters of the Poor. Southern Illinois, 76 points. Kent State, 38 points. ULM, 70 points. That doesn't mean anything to me. LSU, 16 points. Alabama, 7 points. Those are SEC teams. That means something to me. And again, on the road, their best performance this year was Kent State having 390 yards. Every other opponent, ULM last week, was the next best with 427. So I am on Arkansas with a new progressing offense, learning how to play, and just cannot play one of the worst defenses in the country as an away favorite.
Yeah, I mean, I've got power ratings value on Arkansas, and I just like Arkansas in this spot as well. You know, you play against teams like Auburn, A&M, and Alabama, and I think A&M is a very good team. I mean, I have Texas A&M bordering my top 10. Maybe I'm too high on them, but I've got them 11th right now in my power ratings. So I think, you know, that's three legitimate top 12, top 15 types of teams that Arkansas has played the last couple of weeks. Then I've got Ole Miss somewhere in the 45 to 50 range. So now you actually get a team that's much, much closer to your level. And, you know, that's something that's really good for an Arkansas program that, you know, had a couple of tough losses as they were adjusting, then played three teams they had no chance of beating. Now they get somebody halfway through the season with Chad Morris's systems installed. I think it's kind of a good buy sign for Arkansas here this week against Ole Miss. All right, let's talk about your situational play of the week here. For those that maybe missed the last couple of segments, we decided it was best not to do the pick six here because early on in the week, you know, a lot of different things can change. Rolf's still updating a lot of his stuff, things of that sort. So we opted not to do the pick six here, but we will be taking a look at Rolf's situational and technical plays of the week. So what's the favorite spot play from a situational standpoint?
You know, I am going to go with Duke. And you look at what Georgia Tech has done the past 2 weeks and you see, wow, they put up 63 points in Bowling Green and 66 points against Louisville. Well, let me go back and preface. Bowling Green has never played Georgia Tech. We talked about Louisville last week. And on the show, I said I like Georgia Tech because although Louisville's in the ACC, this is the first time they're ever playing each other and they had to do it on a short week. Well, now you have the Duke Blue Devils, who not only play this option and play it very well, they also have played Army each of the last 2 years and played Army earlier this year. So they already prepped for the option once. They're off the loss to Virginia Tech. They're off the bye to give them more time to prep for the option. They've already covered four straight in the series. I say let's make it five straight.
Yeah, and that seems like a really popular play here for this week, and I certainly can't blame anybody for thinking that, although this line has gone back up. I believe I saw it was back up to 2.5 here in this situation, but also Duke, extra rest. And you talked about it last week when we talked about that Georgia Tech-Louisville game. There aren't many things worse than facing the option on a short week. Duke's got extra prep time for the option and the better coach, too, with Cutcliffe over Paul Johnson, I would say. So I really like that situational play that you're looking at there, Rolf. How about the technical play?
You know, the technical play is going to be a system. And this is something you guys can jot down and think about the scenario that'll help in the future. But teams that are off back-to-back wins by 27 or more points, that means you probably have your backups in the fourth quarter. You haven't played back-to-back physical games. You're probably as fresh as can be. And you're playing a team that's allowed 36 or more points. So the team's defense was on the field for a long time. Well, that situation, teams off back-to-back wins by 27 or more points versus a team that allowed 36 or more points, going back all the way to 1989. So we have a great time period, 112-44, that's 72%. That play is on Alabama. Alabama, every win's been easy. They're playing a Missouri team that went back and forth against South Carolina, had rain delays as well. You played in miserable weather. Now you're playing a second straight road game. That system this year is 3-1. So the play again, system play is on Alabama.
Alabama, 28.5-point favorite this week, only up a tiny bit from 28. So still, you know, it's not like this line's gotten away from you or anything like that. Still pretty much hanging there right by the open. Rolf Michaels, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. What do you got going on over there right now, Rolf?
You know what? College basketball is less than a month away. November 6th is a huge schedule. I started putting some stuff up. Actually, I'll post this tomorrow. I wanted to wait till there was no football. I have my new head coaches guide, and in one glance, you'll be able to see the new head coaches, see who has coaching experience, and you're going to find out where they've been the last 4, 5, or 6 years, what jobs they've had. So it's an easy glance to learn who the head coaches are. That's at wagertalk.com. That'll be posted on Wednesday. But you still have my stat compare guide. You have the gridiron guide. You have the daily baseball first pitch, all at wagertalk.com, and then the Cal Sports page.
And you can follow Rolf on Twitter, at CalSportsLV. Rolf Michaels, appreciate your time as always, sir. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Adam.
Good stuff there on today's program with Rolf Michaels, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. We'll have another Wager Talk guest on the show tomorrow. That'll be professional handicapper Brian Leonard to chat a little bit of NFL and some college football with him. And then we probably will have Wes Reynolds at the end of the show. Haven't touched base with him yet here today, but should wind up with him on the program. Thursday, Brad Powers and Tony George. Friday, Super Contest and Brent from DSI Sportsbook. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.